Imagine spending like 6 months building this artificial intelligence model, right?
Yeah.
And it predicts stock market movements with, let's say, 99% accuracy.
Which is the dream scenario for any data scientist.
Right, exactly. The dream. So you deploy it, you go to sleep, feeling like an absolute genius, and then you wake up to find the market just completely shifted overnight.
Oh, yeah, that is a nightmare.
It is, because your model is now confidently feeding your traders just complete garbage data, and you've just lost $10 million before you've even had your morning coffee.
And honestly, that kind of thing happens way more often than companies want to admit.
Yeah, I mean, building AI is glamorous. Everyone loves talking about the latest breakthroughs, the smartest algorithms, all that stuff. But keeping that AI from actually destroying your business.
Right. That's the part nobody talks about.
Exactly. It's a nightmare. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are decoding a highly detailed architectural blueprint. It's called Proven MLOps Architecture for Scalable ML Systems in 2026.
It is a massive document, but it's so important.
It really is. Our mission for this deep dive is to map out this entire life cycle of MLOps, that's machine learning operations, to help you understand the whole journey of an AI model.
Yeah.
Going from raw data all the way to a scalable, automated, and secure production system.
And we really have to do this because as these machine learning systems kind of move out of their novelty phase, they're starting to run critical infrastructure.
Like what?
I mean, everything, logistics, financial networks, healthcare grids, the architecture behind them is literally the only thing standing between business as usual and total systemic chaos.
Wow. Okay, no pressure. So let's figure out how this architecture actually works. Before we look at the specific machinery, we need to understand the fundamental tension that MLOps even solves.
Right.
Because the blueprint makes it super clear that this whole discipline exists to bridge a massive gap between two completely different types of teams.
Yeah, it's a culture clash fundamentally. You have your data science team and your engineering team.
But they do not speak the same language.
Not at all. So data scientists, their entire mandate is experimentation. They care about statistical accuracy, trying out these bleeding edge algorithms, finding hidden patterns in historical data.
Getting the math perfectly right.
Exactly. Their ultimate goal is just to build a mathematical model that makes the best possible prediction.
But they are doing that in a bubble, right?
They absolutely are. And then you have the software engineering teams on the other side. They don't necessarily care about the math.
Right.
Their focus is purely on operational reality, server load, system uptime, latency. They just need to ensure that when 100,000 users hit the software at the exact same second, the servers don't literally melt down.
I was trying to think of an analogy for this, and it's kind of like think of data scientists as master chefs. They lock themselves in a pristine, perfectly controlled test kitchen for months,
Yes.
right? And they invent this brilliant Michelin star recipe.
Which tastes amazing on exactly one plate.
They get it perfect on one single plate. But the engineering team, they are the factory workers who are suddenly handed that recipe and told, hey, mass produce this for 5 million people by Tuesday.
And package it and ship it and don't let it spoil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
MLOps is essentially the automated factory conveyor belt that makes that transition possible.
That analogy actually highlights exactly why these projects fail without MLOps. Because in a test kitchen, the chef might use, I don't know, an artisanal fault you can only buy in tiny batches.
Which you obviously can't use in a massive factory.
Right. The factory can't scale that. So in tech terms, a data scientist might build their model using a perfectly clean static CSV file that's just sitting on their laptop.
Just a local file.
Yeah, but the engineer can't use a laptop file. They have to connect that model to a live fire hose of messy, unstructured, constantly streaming data from an external API.
And do it without crashing the application.
Exactly.
So if you just hand the code over, like throw it over the wall, the factory grinds to a halt.
Usually within hours, honestly. Without a standardized operational bridge, machine learning projects just suffer. Agonizingly slow deployment times, weird software conflicts, and this thing called model drift, which we'll get into.
Where the predictions just get worse and worse.
Right. MLOps is that automated factory floor. It translates the recipe into an industrial supply chain.
Okay, so I get the conveyor belt idea conceptually,
Yeah.
but a software factory is very different from like a car factory. If I'm an engineer tasked with using this, what am I actually automating?
Well, you're building guardrails based on a few non-negotiable rules. First, you have to automate the data pipelines and the testing workflows.
So no humans manually moving files around.
None. Zero. Second rule is reproducibility. If a model generates a specific prediction today, you need the infrastructure to prove exactly how it arrived at that prediction, like 3 years from now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Third is scalability, building cloud infrastructure that just expands automatically when user traffic spikes. And finally, continuous monitoring. You have to have a feedback loop so the data scientists and engineers can collaborate when the real world inevitably changes.
And honestly, none of that even matters if the raw materials are garbage. Which brings us to the very foundation of this entire architecture in the blueprint, the data layer.
It really is the cornerstone. I mean, a model is nothing more than a reflection of the data it learns from.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly. So the very first operational step is building robust data pipelines. These are automated systems that ingest raw data from everywhere. Internal databases, mobile apps, IoT sensors, you name it.
How do they just pull it all into one place?
Yeah, the pipeline takes all that chaotic raw data, validates it for errors, strips out the anomalies, formats it uniformly, and then stores it securely.
Because if you feed a model bad data, it just learns bad habits.
It does. The pipeline ensures that the exact same high-quality data is available consistently. It shouldn't matter if a data scientist is tinkering in their test environment or if the model is running live in production.
Now, I do want to challenge a specific concept the blueprint emphasizes here because it threw me off. Data versioning. Versioning software code makes total sense to me. A developer types a bad line of code, the app breaks, and you just roll back to yesterday's version of the code. Easy.
Right.
But a database is a living thing.
Yeah.
Customers are constantly making new purchases. They're updating their profiles.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, or I guess why would you, version a constantly mutating database?
It sounds totally counterintuitive, I know, but it's critical precisely because the data is alive.
Okay, explain that.
So imagine a scenario. You train a fraud detection model today using a massive database of transaction records. The model works perfectly.
Okay.
Over the next 6 months, millions of new records are added to that database and thousands of old records are purged or updated. Then, in month 7, your model suddenly starts making bizarre, completely inaccurate predictions.
But if I go back to see what it originally learned from, I can't. That original data is just gone.
Exactly. It has been overwritten. You have no way to diagnose the problem. So data versioning solves this by using mechanisms like immutable snapshots or cryptographic hashes.
Oh, so it just freezes a copy of it.
Yes. When a model is trained, the MLOP system mathematically records the exact state of the database at that specific millisecond.
It creates a permanent, auditable paper trail.
We call this lineage tracking. And it's huge. Lineage tracking allows an engineer to look at a single prediction made in production and trace it completely backward.
So they can see, like, where it came from.
Right. They can see exactly which version of the model made the prediction, which specific training run produced that model, and crucially, the exact historical snapshot of the data that model learned from.
That level of traceability seems like it would be a massive headache to set up. I mean, is it really just for troubleshooting?
Troubleshooting is a big part of it, for sure.
Yeah.
But the larger driver is actually regulatory compliance.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. If you are operating in finance or healthcare, regulators don't just want to know that your system works. They demand to know how it makes decisions.
Right. If you deny a loan, you have to prove why.
Exactly. If your system flags a transaction as illegal, you have to prove what underlying data informed that logic. So lineage tracking isn't really a luxury. It's a legal requirement.
Okay, so the foundation is solid. The data is ingested. It's cleansed. It's versioned with a perfect paper trail. Then we move to the next phase in the blueprint, which is the model development lifecycle. The chefs are back in the kitchen.
Right. They are running experiments. They're tuning hyperparameters.
But in an MLOps architecture, those experiments are heavily monitored, right?
Oh, heavily. They use specialized platforms for experiment tracking, rather than a data scientist keeping notes in, like, a random spreadsheet.
Which happens a lot, I assume.
Way too often. But with MLOps, the tracking system automatically logs every algorithm they try, every setting they tweak, and every performance metric the model hits.
And it logs the artifacts. The blueprint mentions storing model artifacts, but for someone not writing code every day, what actually is a model artifact?
Yeah, the most important artifact is the model binary.
The binary.
Right. When a neural network finishes training, it has adjusted millions of internal mathematical weights. A model binary is essentially freezing that final mathematical state into a single deployable file.
Okay, so it is the actual brain that will make the predictions.
Exactly, it's the brain.
Got it. So the tracking system logs these brains, these binaries, And once a data scientist produces one that actually hits the target accuracy, what happens to it?
It gets promoted to the model registry.
Okay, what's that?
Think of the registry as a highly secure centralized vault. It doesn't run the models, it just stores the approved ones.
Like a library.
Yeah. It holds the binary, the version number, the metadata, and that full lineage we talked about earlier. Only models that are fully vetted and locked in this registry are even allowed to be considered for production.
Which transitions us into a concept that, if you're a traditional software engineer, you know really well. CI/CD. Continuous integration and continuous deployment.
Right, the bread and butter of DevOps.
But it gets complicated here, because in a normal app, if I want to update, like, the color of a Buy Now button, CI/CD automatically tests the code to make sure the button works and then pushes it live to the users.
Nice and simple.
But here, we aren't changing a button. We are pushing an entirely new, complex, mathematical brain into a live environment. How do you continuously deploy a brain without breaking the entire business?
Well, it requires a massive shift in how you think about testing. In traditional DevOps, you test the logic of the code. But in MLOps, continuous integration means testing the data pipelines and the training logic.
So you aren't just testing the final model.
No, you are automating tests to ensure the factory machinery itself is working perfectly before it builds anything.
Okay, but how do you test the brain itself? If I build a new fraud model, how does the automated pipeline know if it's actually smarter than the old one?
Through automated validation holdouts.
Holdouts, okay. How does that work?
During training, the pipeline intentionally hides a chunk of historical data from the model. Let's say 20% of all the transactions. The model never sees it.
Like a pop quiz.
Exactly like a pop quiz. Once the model finishes training, the CI pipeline automatically feeds it that hidden 20% and evaluates the predictions.
And if it fails the quiz?
If the new model's accuracy drops below a predefined threshold, say, 95%, the pipeline physically halts. The deployment is blocked automatically.
Wow, so it stops a bad brain from ever leaving the staging area.
Exactly.
But let's say it passes. It hits 98% accuracy on the holdout data. The CI pipeline gives it a green light. Now we have to cross the scariest bridge of all, actually deploying it to real users.
This is where things get tense.
I mean, if I'm processing credit card payments, a bad deployment takes down the whole network. How do engineers handle that kind of risk?
They rely on highly controlled deployment strategies. The blueprint details a few, and it really depends on your risk tolerance.
Okay, what's the lowest risk option?
The lowest risk is batch deployment. This is where the model isn't connected to live user actions at all.
So it's offline?
Kind of. It runs on a schedule. So maybe every night at 2 a.m., it looks at all the daily data, generates a forecasting report, and updates a database.
Super low stress. Because if it fails at 2 a.m., the engineers have, what, hours to fix it before anyone even notices?
Exactly. Nobody's waiting on it. But if you need an instant decision, like your credit card swipe example, you need real-time deployment.
And that's the scary one.
Yeah. The model is deployed behind an API, and it has to return prediction in milliseconds. The risk here is immense. If the model crashes, the transaction fails instantly.
So if I have a working real-time model,
right,
and I want to replace it with a newly trained version, how do I do that without risking a total outage?
You never, ever just swap them out all at once. You use a canary deployment.
Like the bird in the coal mine.
Exactly like that. The system routes the vast majority of your user traffic, say 95%, to the old stable model. Then it takes the new model and exposes it to just a tiny fraction, maybe 5% of your users.
Oh, wow. So you essentially use 5% of your customers as a live testing ground.
Essentially, yes. But you monitor the latency and error rates on that 5% obsessively.
And if it breaks?
If the new model throws errors, the system automatically shuts it down and routes everyone back to the old model. But if it performs beautifully, the system gradually increases the traffic, 10%, 20%, 50%, until the new model takes over entirely.
That is super clever. But there's another strategy mentioned here that has a fascinating mechanism, blue-green deployment.
Oh, I love blue-green.
I was trying to visualize this and imagine a Broadway play.
Okay, I like where this is going.
The old, current model is the lead actor performing on stage. We call that the blue environment. The new model is the understudy. We call that the green environment. Yeah. The understudy is standing right in the wings, fully in costume, microphone turned on, mimicking every single line the lead actor says, but the audience can't hear them.
The traffic isn't routed to them yet.
Exactly. Then when it's time to deploy, the director instantly flips the spotlight and the microphones from the lead to the understudy. All the audience traffic is now on the green environment.
It's a perfect metaphor, truly. And the mechanical advantage of a blue-green deployment is the instant rollback.
Because they're both standing there.
Yes. Because both environments are identical and fully running, if the understudy forgets a line or the new model crashes, the system simply flips the network switch right back to the blue environment. The downtime is virtually zero.
Now, setting up all these dual environments and routing rules, that requires serious system access, which is why the blueprint leans so heavily into security during deployment. We aren't just relying on strong passwords here.
Far from it. When you are automating the deployment of these decision-making systems, security is really about programmatic governance. The blueprint stresses role-based access control, or RBAC.
Explain the mechanism there. Why isn't a standard, you know, multi-factor login enough?
Because the damage potential is just way too high. Think about it. In a normal app, if a junior developer accidentally pushes a bad update, the app looks weird for an hour.
Annoying, but fine.
Right. But in MLOps, if a junior dev accidentally swaps the training data set or modifies the model registry, your company might start denying legitimate loans or approving fraudulent transfers.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
RBAC mathematically restricts system access. It ensures that only a senior engineer using a specific cryptographic key can actually authorize a deployment to the production environment.
Okay, so the model makes it to production securely. The understudy's on stage. They're hitting every mark. The latency is low. The data is flowing. Job done right. Time to go home.
Not even close.
No.
No, because while the software might be perfectly stable, the real world is incredibly chaotic. The moment a model goes live, it basically begins to slowly degrade.
Okay, so this brings us to the final operational phase, monitoring. If you're listening to this and wondering why your company's internal AI chatbot seems to get slightly dumber every single month, this is where you find out why.
Yep, it's a real phenomenon.
But first, what are we actually measuring here? The blueprint divides monitoring into two categories, operational metrics and evaluation metrics.
So operational metrics are your standard infrastructure vital signs. You are measuring latency, which is, you know, how many milliseconds the model takes to return a prediction.
Right, speed.
And you are measuring throughput, which is how many concurrent requests the system can handle before the server just runs out of memory.
But that just tells me the software is awake. It doesn't tell me if it's making smart decisions.
Precisely. It could be delivering terrible predictions really, really fast.
Right.
So to know if the brain is working, you need evaluation metrics. And this requires nuance. You can't just look at a generic accuracy percentage.
Why not? I mean, if a model is 99% accurate, isn't that a massive success?
Mathematically, yes. But practically, it can be a total disaster.
How does that work?
Let's go back to fraud detection. Out of 100,000 credit card swipes, maybe only 10 are actual fraud.
Okay, very small percentage.
Super small. So if your model simply guesses not fraud on every single transaction, it is mathematically 99.99% accurate.
Oh, wow. But it missed all 10 fraudulent charges.
Exactly. It is a completely useless system, even though it's 99% accurate.
That is wild. Okay, so how do engineers actually measure effectiveness then?
They monitor metrics like precision and recall.
Break those down for me.
Precision asks, out of all the times the model cried wolf and flagged a transaction as fraud, how often was it actually right?
So if it flagged 100 transactions, but only 10 were actually fraud.
Then the precision is terrible. It's inconveniencing 90 innocent customers.
Okay, and recall is the inverse of that.
Basically, recall asks, out of all the actual fraud happening in the real world, how much of it did the model manage to catch? Did it catch 9 out of the 10 wolves or only 2?
I see the tension here. Because if you want perfect recall, you just flag literally everything as fraud.
Right, but then your precision tanks.
Exactly.
And that tension is exactly why we monitor something called the F1 score. The F1 score is this mathematical harmonic mean. It balances precision and recall into a single metric.
Nice.
So if the F1 score starts dropping, the engineers know the model's logic is fundamentally failing, even if the servers are running perfectly.
And what actually causes that logic to fail? The blueprint highlights a critical risk here called drift.
Yes. Drift is the silent killer of machine learning. There are two main types. The first is data drift.
Okay.
This is a mechanical shift in the inputs over time. So imagine a temperature sensor on an industrial machine that slowly degrades. Instead of sending perfectly calibrated numbers, it starts sending slightly skewed data.
So the data is just wrong.
Right. The model is receiving data that looks fundamentally different from the clean data it was trained on, so it makes bad predictions.
Okay, so the input data changed, but the actual relationship didn't.
Exactly. But the second type, concept drift, is even wilder.
Okay, concept drift.
Imagine a model trained to predict winter coat sales. It works flawlessly for 5 years, analyzing dates and historical weather to perfectly stock your inventory.
Okay, so it knows November means coats.
Right. But suddenly, global warming shifts regional temperatures up by 15 degrees. The code hasn't broken, the servers are fine, the input dates are correct.
But the rules of the real world changed. People aren't buying heavy coats in November anymore.
That is the perfect illustration of concept drift. The fundamental relationship between the input, the date, and the target outcome buying a coat has structurally shifted. The reality underneath the model changed, rendering the model's internal logic obsolete.
Man. So when the monitoring system detects this F1 score dropping because of concept drift, do the data scientists just have to panic and rebuild everything from scratch?
Well, if you don't have MLOps, yes, it's a massive fire drill. But in a mature MLOps architecture, this is where the entire system comes full circle.
The loop closes.
It does. The monitoring tools continuously track those evaluation metrics. When drift exceeds a specific threshold, it triggers an automated alert. And in the most advanced setups, it automatically triggers a retraining pipeline.
Wait, really? It fixes itself.
It creates a fully closed-loop system. The pipeline automatically pulls the most recent relevant data from that version database we talked about. It runs a new training job in the background, pushes the new model through the CI/CD pipeline for automated holdout testing.
It takes the pop quiz.
Takes the pop quiz, registers the new binary, and then deploys it using a canary strategy to see if it performs better than the degrading model. The factory literally repairs its own machinery.
That is incredible. And that brings this entire blueprint into focus. Yeah. We aren't just talking about a linear path from like laptop to a server. MLOps is an elegant, continuous loop.
Yeah.
You ingest and version the data. You meticulously track the experiments. You lock the mathematical brain in a registry. You test it thoroughly, deploy it behind strict security, and then you watch it obsessively. And the second the real world shifts, the loop feeds right back to the beginning to adapt.
And that operational loop, that's what transforms machine learning from just an interesting science experiment into a resilient, scalable business asset.
Which is why this framework is so vital. Whether you are leading a software team, preparing for a corporate transition to AI, or you're simply trying to understand how the future of technology actually functions, you have to realize that having the smartest algorithm is like only 10% of the battle.
At most.
If you don't have the industrial factory to sustain it, the model is essentially worthless.
It is about building long-term trust. As we hand over more and more critical decisions to AI, we just have to know that the infrastructure supporting those decisions is bulletproof.
Which leaves us with a final thought on accountability. Think about the high-stakes models being rapidly deployed right now in banking or healthcare. If an automated system denies your mortgage application, or if it misdiagnoses a severe medical condition, the engineers cannot just look at the software code to figure out why it happened. Neural networks are essentially black boxes.
You can't just read the math.
Exactly. Huh. But thanks to the architecture we just explored, they don't have to guess. They are mathematically forced to trace the exact lineage of that single failure back through the deployment logs, into the model registry, through the CI pipelines, all the way down to the specific version of the database the model originally learned from.
It's all connected.
In the very near future, MLOps won't just be about operational efficiency. It will be the only technical mechanism we have to enforce accountability on artificial intelligence.
A sobering but absolutely essential reality. Traceability is the foundation of accountability.
It really is. It's definitely something to think about the next time a piece of software seems to know exactly what you want. That's our deep dive for today. Keep questioning the systems around you. Keep learning, and we'll catch you next time.